Ronald E. Hunkler was born on June 1st, 1935, to Edwin and Odell Hunkler in St. Louis, Missouri. He grew up ending up working for NASA and designed some shit that helped keep the space shuttle from burning up on reentry into the Earth's atmosphere. He lived a long life and died in May of 2020. But Ronald, or Ronnie to his friends, carried a secret his whole life. Ronnie was the inspiration for a book that was quickly turned into one of the most well-known films ever made. That's right, Pee-wee's Big Adventure. Just kidding. But today's secret word is The Exorcist. So if you hear the secret word, make sure you spin your head all the way around and scream real loud.
It's evil! Don't touch it!
It's alive!
I was with you.
They're coming to get you.
By the power of Christ.
This is
me.
Hello, Mr. Fancy Pants.
Oh my goodness, what's going on, my man? This is like back in the day shit right now, isn't it?
This is kind of weird, isn't it?
Just the duo.
Just you and me and Bobby McGee. I don't know. this is fucked up. Yeah, we haven't done an episode on our own, and it's been like, fuck, we've been doing episodes with Lindy and Todd longer than I think we've been doing episodes alone.
I know we did one that we couldn't air because we did watch The Evil Dead 2 and do stuff over it, but then it turns out probably wouldn't be legal to release it. Sony already thought they owned music that you had made. So,
yeah.
Like, you're probably not going to get away with that one.
No, sure you're not.
But no, holidays, it's the holiday season of Halloween, and this will be coming out later.
Yeah, or maybe not. I don't know. This might come out next, and then we'll do the next thing that we just finished after that. We don't know. I mean, we don't really know until we're done. I mean,
it's just however
every episode
it falls.
I've ever seen anyone do on this particular subject, they always say, "Well, we tried to upload it and it got fucked up, and I'm sorry it was released 5 days later, a week later, whatever." So we'll see what happens with all this shit.
There's a possession one that I want to do. I think I know. I mean, there was a movie made about it, but I think I know the reasoning behind it. But also, I do want to play the audio clips of her because it's just like fucking terrifying.
That's not good, Matt. You don't want to do that because then you're like, you invite the shit into your house doing that shit, right?
No. I don't think so.
Well, let's hope not, right? Now, I don't give a fuck what you believe in. I mean, you can believe in God, you can be an atheist, you can be a Jew, you can be whatever.
Do you?
I don't care. You know, it doesn't matter. All I can tell you is I do believe that the devil believes in you regardless. So,
and I vaguely know this story, but I do know the movie fucking super well because it was
okay. Well, they took a lot of liberties with the movie.
Oh, they certainly did. Yeah. But yeah. What was it? Did we do, I think it was Todd's first episode when we were talking about like our favorite movies for Halloween. And I told you guys that I had watched The Exorcist like when I was
like
a little kid.
Seven or some shit, right?
Yeah. Because it was Top Gun had come out and Dad had rented everything. And like I said, he would always put it up on top of the, because my dad was a huge man. He was like super tall. Well, not super tall, 6'3", but anyway, that's tall big for me because I'm tall. 6 foot.
Yeah.
And he would always put the movies just up on top of the refrigerator because when you walk past the refrigerator, he's going out the door. That way you wouldn't forget them to take them back. Well, I'd watch Top Gun and then I'd give it to Dad. He put it up there. Well, the next day, Mom and Dad were out mowing and weeding and doing the shit that they do. And I climbed up there and grabbed
the first thing. You're like, I'm going to watch Top Gun again.
I was like, this is definitely Top Gun. Yeah. It's like,
watching those fucking Navy boys fucking play volleyball shirtless on the beach.
It's like, I feel a need for speed. And so popped it in, but it happened to be The Exorcist. By the time they got inside, and it was almost over. I mean, seriously, because Mom was like, "You got to shut that off." And I was like, "I ain't made it this far."
Oh shit!
And I also remember, like RoboCop when it first came out. Like a lot of people don't realize that how violent that fucking movie was.
Oh, dude, it was. I think it was supposed to be rated X when it came out, right?
Well, it was definitely rated R, but I watched it with my dad.
Yeah, and then he was probably like, "Oh shit, it's probably bad."
No, he didn't say anything. I just remember laying in bed whenever he was watching it with Mom later that night, because like Mom was like, "Oh, let's watch a movie." So, and I could hear my mom from my bed. She was like, "You let Matt watch this?" And he goes, "He's watched worse than this."
I was like, he's seen right. The Exorcist.
He's woman. Actually right, Mom. Awesome. So it was always those parents that were like, "You're not allowed to watch rated R movies." And I was like, the only reason why I kept my kids from watching certain movies because I thought that it would keep them up at night. But my daughter is worse than me.
Really?
She watched The Exorcist and she gave it back to me and said, "I thought it was boring." I was like, "Was you not paying attention?" She goes, "No, I watched the whole thing. I just didn't think it was that good. I didn't think it was scary at all." But she thought Annabelle Creation was scary. It's like, okay, so you got the little doll complex. You got that from Crystal.
Yeah. So, yeah.
I bet if she watched Trilogy of Terror, she'd be fucking, no, no, or Child's Play or some shit like that.
Here's what you need to do. You need to get your sister Crystal to sit down with your daughter and watch Trilogy of Terror
and just record it.
Yes.
Because Crystal would just be like, no, mm-mm.
Not happening. Nope. Uh-oh. All right, let's get on with this shit because I don't think we can get through this in one episode.
Okay.
You ready?
I am ready to rock, dude.
All right. So all this info that I got came from a book called The Devil Came to St. Louis, and this is the uncensored true story of the 1949 exorcism, written by Trey Taylor. He's done about four different versions of this book, and this particular version was not released until Ronald died because he swore he would never release his name until after he'd passed.
Well, I think I think his identity was revealed, but it wasn't because he did it. I think somebody did figure it out, but it wasn't until way later on.
As far as I know, man, 2020 was when, I mean, he was always been referred to as R. Doe, or there's another pseudonym that they put in there, just R.
Okay. Okay. Well, R. It could have been.
Instead of Ronnie, I think it might have been started with an R. I mean, I don't recall, but.
Probably where they got Reagan from because they both start with R's. But yes. I knew it was a boy from St. Louis, not a girl from, what was it, San Francisco?
Yeah. And actually, this story does not start in St. Louis.
Oh, it doesn't?
No, his parents were from St. Louis, and it goes to St. Louis, but that's not where it starts.
Okay.
So, like I said, Ronald's identity was protected by the exorcists and the church for decades. And then after his death in May 2020, his name was released. Ronald, Ronnie to his friends, E. Hunkler, was born June 1st, 1935 in St. Louis. His parents, Edwin and Odell, met in St. Louis, where Edwin worked with Odell's father. James Copus was his name, as a machinist with Edwin's brother-in-law, Eugene Hendricks Jr., who was married to Edwin's sister, Matilda, or Tilly, as she was known to her friends and family.
You don't get a lot of Matildas these days.
No. So Edwin moved his family, Odell and Ronnie, to Cottage City, Maryland in 1935 to work as a machinist in the war industry. This is right during World War II era. Yep. So a year after they left, Odell's mother, Anna, moved in with them after her husband, James, died. Now, Odell was just a homemaker, typical for the times, and her mother was a constant presence in all of their lives. She was born in Germany, and her English fucking sucked, so Anna constantly had to translate for her.
Well, at least she got the fuck out of there.
Yeah, before all the shit went down, yeah, right? Now, both women were devout Lutherans, always attended service at St. Stephen's Lutheran Church. And Ronnie grew up as an only child from age 4 with both of these women, fucking just giving him a hard time, basically. His mom was really overbearing. His grandma smothered him. So you could say this boy did not have the best childhood.
It does sound like the making of a serial killer. I mean, we've been through a lot of them.
Right, in the same vein.
And overbearing mothers. And yeah.
And also with some of the other shit we've covered, like the Black Monk, stuff like that. You've got a kid when this stuff starts. You've got a kid that's
right at adolescence.
Teenage years.
Yeah. Freaking ready to go through puberty.
Troubled. Yes. He was always considered a loner, didn't have a whole lot of friends. And he got picked on all the time.
Kids suck, dude. Kids can be brutal. I know. That's one of them.
It's just part of life, man. Yeah. So Edwin, Ronnie's father, his side of the family, they were really close. So they would travel to St. Louis often, which was really rare for the time. They would take the train back to St. Louis to see his family. And as he grew up, Ronnie became really close with his Aunt Tilly, who was Edwin's sister. And there's been a lot of speculation that inappropriate shit happened between them, but there's nothing to back any of that up. And I think it was basically, Tilly was an escape for Ronnie from his mom and his grandma, because she wasn't as overbearing and she just kind of gave him a little more freedom.
So you think that was just kind of thrown in there, just kind of spruce it up a little bit, maybe?
Oh, yeah. Okay. All this shit about a Ouija board that she gave him and she was a spiritualist, all bullshit.
There was no Captain Howdy?
There was no Captain fucking Howdy.
Okay.
No.
Great song.
So at age 13, Ronnie was in the middle of eighth grade at Bladensburg Junior High in January of 1949 when he was removed from school. And then he did not go back for the rest of the year because an incident occurred where he was sitting down at a desk and it started moving on its own. And all the other desks around him started moving on their own. And the teacher's like, "Stop it, Ronnie. Stop it." And he's like, "I'm not fucking doing it.
It's bizarre."
And he's like, "Fuck you. Stop it." So they just basically kicked him out of school.
Yeah, because that's totally...
Yeah.
With machine bullets. How the fuck is that kid doing that? If I was that teacher, I'd just been like, "I'm fuck out."
Could be. I don't know. So like I said, it started, that was sometime around January 13th, 14th, 15th. And then on January 15th.
What was this New Year's resolution? I'm going to get kicked out of school.
So at this time, the hunklers reported unusual scratching sounds that came from inside the walls and the ceilings.
See, they did cover that in the movie because they thought they were rats.
Yeah. They called an exterminator. They found no sign of mice or any rats. And then after the exterminator left, things just got more intense. They started hearing footsteps.
I got to tell you, hang on. As soon as you said exterminator, I pictured John Goodman from Arachnophobia. I was like, he shows up, he's got a pack on his back like a fucking Ghostbuster. Those fucking glasses on, flip down, boom. Get you sons of bitches.
So, anyway, after the exterminator left, things just intensified. They started hearing all these footsteps in the hallways and in Ronnie's room. Dishes started rattling in the cabinets, and then the house seemed to vibrate like a truck was driving by when
Black Monk.
Nothing there. Exactly like the Black Monk, because this is what it reminded me of, like a poltergeist type situation.
Right, yeah.
And then Ronnie's bed would sometimes start to shake. His sheets would be pulled off, and if he held onto the sheets, he'd get pulled off the fucking bed with the sheets. There we go.
Black Monk exactly, again. Right? Yeah.
A lot of people claimed that Ronnie had played with a Ouija board and that his Aunt Tilly had given him one. There's nothing to back that shit up. When it comes down to it, Adele and her mom and made claims that Tilly was responsible because they didn't fucking like her at all. They fucking hated this lady. just because she was kind of a free spirit.
Okay, but if you did give the kid a Ouija board and shit like that happened, you'd just be like,
a different story. But there's nothing. There's nothing to back it up.
I'm gonna throw that away so nobody ever knows that I did that shit.
Right, but this all comes from the Exorcist diary.
One of the priests made a diary
of all the everything that they claimed happened. They never mentioned a Ouija board at all.
Yeah, I was gonna say. I think there's a new documentary.
Two devout Lutheran women are gonna let a kid play with a fucking Ouija board in their house.
You wouldn't think so. I wouldn't let my kids have a Ouija board in my house. No.
Yeah. So 11 days after this strange stuff started happening, Ronnie's Aunt Tilly died on January 26th. Which is weird.
A little bit.
But she'd been sick for a while, I guess.
Okay.
So, like I said, Odell and Anna immediately started blaming this weird shit happening. It's got to be Tilly's ghost, even though this shit started before she died. So, they never liked her. They told their Lutheran minister and also insisted that it be put in the written history of the case, the Exorcist Diary, that was kept by the Jesuits later involved. I'm going to do that every fucking time.
I would too.
I'm just not going to spin my head around.
Don't you put that evil on me.
Damn it, Ricky. One night, Ronnie's bed shook so hard that the mattress slid off the frame. And when it stopped shaking, the covers lifted straight up off the bed, stood upright, and stayed that way until somebody touched them, and then they fell down.
Okay, I was going to say I've had similar experiences until you said the sheets thing flew up in the air.
I thought you were going to go with something else about like maybe some protein stains, but okay. Regardless.
You had a lot to get rid of.
I was backed up, baby.
It's been a minute.
Yeah. Other accounts state that books would fall off the bookcase and land at his feet. Coats flew off hangers in the closet, and they would land on his shoulders. And then the kitchen table flipped over on its own. Oh, so we're talking like poltergeist type shit. That's what it sounds like, right?
That's hardcore. Yeah, that's hardcore poltergeist stuff, yeah.
Yeah. So at one point, some relatives came to visit during this time. Ronnie's sitting in a chair with everyone else in the living room. It's a big, heavy fucking chair, okay? This kid weighs fucking maybe 90 pounds soaking wet. And this chair flipped forward and dumped him on the floor. Just boom. And then the men were like, what the fuck? So they go over and they try to flip it over, like sitting in it. They couldn't do it. Grown ass men. It was too fucking heavy.
Black monk? It was like one over the.
Unless
you got pinned underneath this stuff that wasn't heavy, but nobody could move it until it allowed them to.
Right.
It was just like, we're not hurting anybody, but you're not getting this until I say you can.
Yeah.
That's hardcore poltergeist, dude. That's
Oh, I think we're gonna go into demonic possession, actually.
I think, probably it's a bit more than poltergeist in
the while the men are doing this, like trying to test this out, Ronnie's aunt points to a vase that's sitting on an end table by the couch, and it slowly just like fucking floats up off the end table, levitates for a minute, and then flies across the room and smashes against the wall.
What a dick.
Probably wasn't expensive. I mean, Jesus.
You wouldn't think those demons are pleasant. So yeah.
I wouldn't think so either. Yeah.
Probably just something they do. It's like, oh yeah, you think that's bad? I'm also gonna just put a little dirt in the wound.
Ronnie's parents would wake up to hear him screaming in the middle of the night, rush to his room, and at one point they see a heavy dresser slide across the floor and block the door behind him.
They put that in the movie. Yep. So yeah, they did take liberties.
It happened more than once. That was the first time this has happened. Then the dresser drawers briefly begin to open and slam shut on their own for about a minute, and then they stops. And okay, at this point they're kind of like, "What the fuck?" Right?
You think?
Yeah, I think so. Probably long before this. So soon after that event happened, Ronnie's family goes to visit some friends, and Ronnie sits down in the rocking chair in their house, and it begins to spin around on its own. Like, his feet are off the floor. His feet are in the chair. 8 people saw this happen.
So it's not, it's, I think this kind of goes back to what Lindy was saying. It's like, sometimes it's not a place that's haunted. It's a person.
It's a person. Yeah.
And then it's tagging along with him because it's already attached itself somehow. However, yeah, it got in. Fuck.
Yeah.
This so, is, mm-hmm, it's Halloween time.
Ronnie's mom and his grandma are fucking flipping out at this point. They bring in a spiritualist to get rid of whatever is afflicting Ronnie without any success. So then they go talk to their Lutheran minister named Reverend Luther Schultz, and just to try to get rid of the weird shit happening. And he went on record in the Exorcist diary stating that he witnessed furniture move in the house, dishes fly through the air, glasses break. He was pushed by something unseen, and he saw Ronnie's bed shake and vibrate on its own. While okay, Ronnie like just basically laid still in it.
I've got nothing. I've got nothing. Did you, you got pushed or tugged or something that one time we used to go hunting, like was something tugged, yeah, on your jacket or something like, yeah, that?
Yeah, it was my backpack. I had a backpack on.
Backpack?
And I felt something like just like, it like pulled me back, like back about a step. And I was like, what the fuck was that? It freaked me the fuck out.
Yes, it would anybody, I would think. Yeah, that's, yeah, I've never been close to anything like that. Like physically, like getting a hold of you. That's,
yeah.
That's where you're.
That was
like,
my last ghost hunt, buddy. That was my last one. I was like, "Fuck this shit."
That's most people's last ghost hunt. Yeah, I'm gonna have. Yeah, it's like, okay, so yeah, okay. No, I got enough proof. I didn't get it on video, and I don't fucking care. I'll, yeah, let other people do it.
Yeah. So over the course of all these events happening, started Ronnie starts acting more distant, cursing. His entire personality starts to change. In a matter of like weeks, like 2 or 3 weeks. His mom and grandma asked Reverend Schultz if he thought Ronnie might be possessed, but he did not know hardly anything about possession because the Lutherans kind of broke away from the Catholic Church and decided it's got to be, you know, they went more towards the medical side. Like it has to be mental health issues, right?
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I don't care how fucking crazy you are. You can't move beds
on your own.
Well, I mean, you can if you're standing there picking them up, but if you're laying in it.
He didn't believe in like psychokinesis and shit like that. That he could.
Oh, so he thought he was projecting it from his mind. Still, that's not a psychiatrist is probably not going to be able to help you with that either.
Yeah.
Are they?
He thought it had to be paranormal, but he didn't think it was the work of the devil. So he thought Ronnie was probably unconsciously using psychokinesis to move things.
Mm-hmm.
But he kept this theory from them. He kind of kept it to himself. So all these things kept happening night after night until finally on February 17th, Reverend Schultz conducted a little experiment. He got Ronnie out of the house, away from the family, took him to his house to observe him overnight. And he got his wife to sleep in the guest room. And in his main bedroom, they had twin beds. It's like fucking Brady Bunch era, right?
Right, yeah.
So he's got Ronnie in one bed, and he's sleeping in the other bed.
That's 10 minutes. Better than the last episode we recorded.
Right? Let's not go there.
Okay.
It might be the one after this, too. We don't know yet.
The one before. Yeah. The next one coming. Whatever. Okay.
Right. Time's a tricky thing. So 10 minutes after Ronnie goes to bed, Schultz hears Ronnie's bed creaking and shaking. And then scratching noises start all along the walls and the ceiling. So he quickly goes and flips the lights on, and he sees that the bed's starting to vibrate more and more intensely. And he starts praying, and it just fucking gets worse.
Oh, so dude, it's like, yeah.
He saw Ronnie just sit there, and he's like wide awake, just staring. He's completely still while all this shit's happening. So Reverend Schultz gets Ronnie up out of the room. And then go get cocoa just to like kind of calm down, you know?
I'll put a little whiskey in it, maybe.
Kids like 12 or 13. I don't know about that.
Hey, my grandpa used to give me whiskey and honey when I had a sore throat.
Yeah, but like.
Wasn't a lot of it.
Yeah.
Just like enough. 4 or 5 shots. Just
little dab will do you. 4 or 5 bottles.
Just a fifth of Calvert's.
So they go, they get cocoa. Kind of just talk for a minute, and then they go back to the bedroom and he tries to get Ronnie to go back to sleep in a really heavy armchair. He leaves the lights on and he's watching Ronnie in the chair, and it slowly begins to move backwards and forwards several inches at a time. Just sliding on the floor. And Schultz says, okay, get your feet up off the floor. I want to make sure this is not you doing this. I want to see your full weight in the chair. Just kept moving back and forth until it finally just slams into the wall and slowly tips over. And it knocks Ronnie out onto the floor.
What?
Ronnie
what
had fucking sat still in the chair the entire time, just staring forwards, kind of like he was in a trance.
Holy, I wonder what the deal is with the like demons, ghosts, poltergeists, or whatever. What their deal is with furniture or cabinet doors? Is it as they build your paranoia or fear, they can get stronger? Is that kind of? I don't know if that's the thing.
I don't know
if
that's correct.
It kind of seems like.
I don't know if there's certain kind of like maybe like parameters better made furniture. They like that better. I'm not sure, Matt.
I just wondered.
No fucking clue, man.
It's like now we gotta. I think the more they scare you, it's like the boogeyman. Like the more they scare you,
the stronger the
power they might have. Maybe the more you believe in them, then
Freddy Krueger shit. Yeah.
Yeah. I can't come back if they don't believe. Can't come back if they don't believe.
So at this point, Reverend Schultz makes a pallet on the floor for Ronnie to sleep on, and they go to bed. And then around 3 a.m., Schultz wakes up to see this pallet slide slowly under the bed while all the blankets remain unfolded. They're just flat as can be, like nothing's moving them. They're just like fucking kind of like levitating almost. And he yells at Ronnie, says, stop that, stop that. And then Ronnie wakes up and fucking just like, it's like he's in a trance, and he's at this point, he's under the bed, and he's like just hitting his head on the top of the fucking bed springs over and over and over and over and over again.
What the fuck?
Yeah.
How about that? They need to redo this movie, or maybe that new one will be.
I don't know.
We'll see.
This shit just crazy. Continues to escalate, man. We're only to February 26th. That's when the strange markings started appearing on Ronnie's body, like scratches, like cat scratches.
Yeah.
And some start to resemble letters of the alphabet. Supposedly, it was at this point that the Hunklers reached out to the St. James Catholic Church in Mount Rainier, Maryland, where they spoke with Father Albert Hughes, who listened to their story. Gave them holy water, some blessed candles. Told them to sprinkle the holy water around Ronnie's room, light the candles when anything weird happened. So that night,
I think we've learned in the past on some episodes is like, don't try to do an exorcism if you're not prepared to do it, because you're just going to piss them off more.
It was more of a deterrent. It was supposed to be like a deterrent for them, you know, because they're not Catholic. They're Lutheran. They're not Catholic.
Oh, so we can't help you then.
Yeah, you're not Catholic. You're not,
we can't be bothered.
Well, it wasn't that. It was like, try this. Try this first. So that night, they go to bed. The bottle levitated off the dresser and smashed against the wall when Adele lit one of the candles.
The bottle of holy water levitated and smashed against the wall. Okay, see, that's powerful there, though. I've got to imagine if that's a demon, that's a super strong one if they're able to do that with holy water.
Yeah. And then when she tried to light the candles, the flames shot up to the ceiling, so she put them out.
It's like Cain. It's like Cain walking into the. It's when Cain enters the wrestling ring.
Yeah. Some stories say she called Father Hughes and he came to the house, but it's all bullshit. Some people say that that's when Ronnie started speaking in Latin, and that's when Hughes contacted his archbishop. That's all bullshit. None of that shit happened. Reverend Hughes never met Ronnie in person. This book is, it goes into fucking exquisite detail on everyone involved in this story.
Right.
And I mean, like, it's boring in parts because it's like, I don't really want to fucking know what Reverend Hughes's mother had for dinner on, when he was 7 years old.
Tell me about it, dude. Some of them I've read. It's like, I mean, what's this got to do with what I'm
researching?
This
guy really did his fucking homework. So if you really want to get involved in this, I really recommend you go pick up this book. It's on Amazon by Troy Taylor. We're not We're not even fucking close. This might be three parts if we keep talking like this.
Okay. Let's get in it.
Yeah. The very first diary, exorcist diary, states that on February 26, scratches started appearing on Ronnie's body for four consecutive nights. Words. The letters were clear and seemed to have been scratched on his body by claws. Ronnie's mom decided that maybe a trip would help stop whatever was happening to him. So she said, hey, let's go visit our family in St. Louis. And then the word Lewis appeared on Ronnie's ribcage and scratched out letters. On March 5th, Ronnie's parents took a train to St. Louis. The very first night, he was staying with his relatives. I think it was his father's brother. That's the house they were at. No, I'm wrong. This is Odell's relatives. When more writing appeared on his body while he was reading a comic book. Like, he's sitting there in the living room with everybody else, and he just starts fucking screaming. He lifts up his shirt, and he's got all these fucking scratch marks all over. Oh,
so many movies have done that. I mean, it's
yeah,
so many of them.
It's all based on this shit.
Yeah.
When he went to bed that night, the bed shook. Scratching noises could be heard. This is the first time Ronnie's extended family saw this stuff firsthand, and it freaked him the fuck out. Sure. So March 8th, that's at this point, Ronnie and his parents had relocated to Ronnie's uncle's house, located at 8435 Roanoke Drive in Belnor, which is a suburb of St. Louis. Mm-hmm. So basically, his mom's relatives say, you probably need to go. And that's when they go to his father's relative's house. And this is the house that where Ronnie's exorcism would begin. The first day they were there, everything was calm. No incidents until Ronnie's parents started talking about possibly putting him in school since they were going to stay there for a while. And as soon as Ronnie's mom mentioned this, Ronnie could be heard screaming in the other room. And when Ronnie's mom went to see what was wrong, Ronnie lifted his shirt to show her a new scratch. No school had been scratched out on his chest.
What the fuck?
Yeah. That evening, Ronnie slept in his cousin's room. When his cousin Neil started screaming after they'd gone to bed, both the couples ran upstairs to find both boys on the bed while the mattress slammed up and down and the bed slid across the floor. After this happened, Ronnie's older cousin Janice spoke to one of her Jesuit teachers at St. Louis University. She spoke with Raymond Bishop, who was not yet a priest, the next day. And he arranged a meeting with Father Paul Reinhardt, who was the president of St. Louis University. And Reinhardt was kind of torn because if true permission had to be granted by the archbishop, he suggested that Reverend Bishop just go to the house, bless it, and just kind of check it out for himself before he took any further action. And this is in the middle of the 40s where the Catholic Church is trying to welcome Black people into the Catholic Church because they'd been segregated up to this point.
Right.
So they're already fighting that battle, and they're trying to just not make any more attention than they've already made for themselves. So he's like, I don't need any more shit on my fucking plate right now. It's basically what he told them.
Wow.
So on March 9th, Bishop came to the house. He questioned Ronnie's parents on what had been happening. Then he sat down with Ronnie alone, and then he walked to the house, blessing each room as he went. He also left a small second-class relic, which is something that's just been touched by a saint. Like, a first-class relic would be an actual piece of the saint, like a bone, hair like fragments, bone. Whatever. Yeah.
Okay.
It was of Saint Margaret Mary, and he attached this to Ronnie's pillow with a safety pin.
That's where they got the crucifix part from.
It's coming. No, it's coming up next.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Dude, this shit goes on for a while.
Oh, damn.
He stayed until Ronnie went to bed, and he was about to leave when everyone heard thumping and banging coming from Ronnie's bedroom, followed by Ronnie screaming. So everyone runs upstairs into the bedroom. And this is a quote from the Exorcist diary. Even after the blessings of the house and in spite of the relic, the swaying was evident and scratches appeared. When Father Bishop sprinkled St. Ignatius holy water on the bed in the form of a cross, the movement ceased quite abruptly, but it began again when Father stepped out of the room. During the course of 15 minutes of activity, a sharp pain seemed to have struck R on his stomach, and he cried out. The mother quickly pulled back the bed covers and lifted the boy's pajamas enough to show zigzag scratches in bold red lines on the boy's abdomen.
Yeah. What do you do if you're in that position? I mean, seriously, if that's your kid, you'd be like, fucking
find a young priest and a fucking old priest, man.
Get this fixed now. I want
what does any of this have to do with gay porn?
It has nothing to do with gay porn.
It's true. It doesn't.
I hit the wrong button.
You gotta really want it.
Yeah. So the next day, Father Bishop discussed the events with his friend, Father William Bowden, who had been one of his teachers and who was the current pastor of St. Francis Xavier Church in St. Louis. Fucked up. Full circle moment here. The kid that I grew across the road from in Effingham, that's the church he got married in.
Oh, I know who you're talking about. I just,
okay. Yeah, we're going to leave it out, but yeah. So I've been in this church, and some of the shit that went on in this story happened in that church.
I have seen
St. Louis University. Yeah. It's a huge, beautiful church.
Yep. I've been by it. I've never been in it, but I know which one you're talking about. Yeah.
So the next night, the events continued to escalate, scratching, bed shaking, footstep stomping, and the relic was thrown across the room. On its own, like it just detached itself from the pillow, and
dude, that's a strong one, man. That's a. It seems like we are Legion, you know. Fucking.
Oh yeah, yeah. So Ronnie's cousin talked to Father Bishop again the following day. He agreed to come back to the home with Father Bowden that evening around 10 p.m. So Bowden brought two relics with him. One was a first class relic of St. Francis Xavier, which it was a piece of bone from his right arm. And the other was a cross that had been hollowed out and contained two separate first class relics of St. Peter Canisius. I don't know. I'm not Catholic. I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing that right.
Canisius?
I'm not either.
I don't. Close enough.
So the priest got to the home around 10:30. Bishop introduced Father Bowden to Ronnie's family, and then Father Bowden talked to Ronnie alone for about 30 minutes. And then Ronnie went to bed around 11:15, and 5 minutes after this, everybody could hear him crying for help upstairs. So the family, along with the priests, went upstairs to investigate what was going on. They found Ronnie sitting up, his face completely pale and scared to death. He held his arms up to show a cross that had been scratched on the outer forearm. I think it was his right outer forearm. So at that point, Father Bowden reads prayers, blesses Ronnie by moving the relic cross over him in the sign of the cross. Then he attached the cross to Ronnie's pillow next to the other relic of St. Margaret Mary. At this point, Ronnie settled down. So everyone went back downstairs. At this point is when Father Bishop began his exorcist diary, asking questions to Ronnie's parents about the family's background, as far as, you know, their religious belief and what all the things that had been happening. As the two priests were leaving, everyone heard a loud crash from upstairs. They rushed back up to Ronnie's bedroom. Ronnie told him that he'd been asleep when a bottle of holy water Father Bishop had left on the first visit flew off the table and landed on the floor. This time it didn't break, just flew off the table. So Father Bowden pulled out a rosary, put it on Ronnie, and then he and Father Bishop started reciting the rosary until Ronnie again calmed down and fell asleep. They both blessed the boy again, said goodnight, and then they left around 1 a.m., headed home.
This is actually fucking terrifying. I'll tell you what, it's just like, I don't know, it's almost just like every other freaking story that we do. It's hard for me not to put myself in it.
Oh, yeah.
It's just like, what would you do? I mean, what are you going to do?
You're going to get a fucking young priest and an old priest, man.
That's what you're going to have to do. It's like, fuck, I don't know anything else. I don't know what else to do. I don't know.
So a few minutes after the priests leave, the rest of the family hears a loud scraping sound upstairs. So they run upstairs. This shit reminds me of Clue. You know what I mean? The movie Clue. Yeah, like where yeah, they run yeah, up, I know. They're running back and forth all the time. They run upstairs and they try to open Ronnie's door, but it's blocked by something behind the door. So Edwin, Ronnie's dad, puts his fucking shoulder to this door three or four
times.
I'm
getting in that motherfucker. Yeah,
goddamn right. Yeah. Yeah. He does. He gets in there. It's slowly edged up and enough that he could open enough to squeeze in. And he finds that this large, heavy bookcase that had been on the other side of the room was fucking blocking the door. There's no way some fucking 98-pound kid's fucking moving that thing on his own. And at this point, after everybody gets into the room, Odell makes sure to point out that Tilly, which is Edwin's dead sister, you know, Aunt Tilly, has got to be responsible for everything that has been happening, even though she died two fucking weeks.
No.
After all this shit started happening. She didn't like the bitch.
Okay, so I would have to check with Lindy, but I would think nothing that was ever living that came back would have that kind of power. This would have to be
not this soon after they died anyway, you would think. It'd take a little while. I figure you'd have to learn how to fucking crawl before you could walk and run.
Yeah, you gotta level up, right?
Yeah.
There's no way you rolled that good with your die to get that fucking much power.
Unless you should like just roll on like a one sided die, you know.
Nothing but 20s.
So, when everything quieted down finally that night, everybody went to bed and Odell stayed with Ronnie and she laid down next to him. And then sometime later that night, there was a stool next to the bed and it just fell over. And the crucifix that Father Bodern had put on Ronnie's pillow started sliding underneath the covers and slithering on its own.
Creepy.
Yeah, I don't like that. Oh God, it goes back to those things like,
yeah,
the worst thing ghosts can do are mess with your feet or be underneath the covers or whatever, you know,
that's where you're supposed to be. Under the bed, yeah. Under the covers, yeah. Fuck you.
It's where you're supposed to be the most safe. You're in your home and you're in your bed. It's supposed to be, but no, that's where they go right at you. They're like, nope.
They want to get you when you're most vulnerable. Yeah. So she jumps up, grabs Ronnie. And they ran out of the room and go downstairs. And the whole rest of that evening, they slept with the rest of the family on the living room floor.
There's so many stories like that, too, that The Conjuring, when we did the true story of The Conjuring, where they all slept in the same room.
Yeah.
This is like, at least we're all together when the shit
strength
breaks.
Strength in numbers, right? Strength in numbers,
you would think. It was like, the love of our family is going to keep this together. And then that entity is just like, nah. Man, let me get in that. I want to break that shit up.
Yeah.
Fucking assholes. Demons are assholes.
I think that's why they're demons, Matt.
I think so. I like to go with the D&D fucking metal version of demons where it's just like, oh, it's cool. It's, you know, it's nothing big. It's, but when you get into the real stuff, it's just like, nah, fuck you. Nah, I don't like it.
I'm out. Yeah.
I'm out.
So after reporting all these events to Reverend Bishop, he goes to the Archbishop Joseph Ritter on March 14th to get permission to perform an exorcism, and it's granted. So,
you know how much proof they got to have to do that shit? Like, it's got to be real. Because
Father Bodern had a lot to do with it because he was there and he was really older, experienced priest, and he'd seen a lot of shit. So I think he was like, well, if he says it's okay.
It'd be one of those things where he walks into the cardinal and he's like, I am not fucking around.
Yeah.
This shit's real. And there's like, oh, he's cussing. It's got to be. Let's just grant it.
Yeah. The only stipulation he has, like, keep it quiet. Just fucking keep all this shit quiet.
We don't want anybody to know. Yeah.
Exactly. Okay. Like I said, we got enough shit going on with the the segregation shit that we're trying to fix.
Yeah, so, that's way worse than the diddling of children, but.
Yeah.
I still got the last episode of my. Or the future episode.
Well, you're fucking shit up. You're fucking my head up. So Father Bodern was selected to perform the ritual Romanum, but he insisted that Bishop continue his exorcist diary because it could be helpful to anyone placed in a similar position in future cases, because at the time, there was fucking nothing current. I mean,
right.
We're talking about shit from like 300 years ago. was all they had. So the quote unquote exorcism of Roland Doe began on Wednesday, March 16th in that house on Roanoke Drive in St. Louis. That afternoon, Father Bodern
Drive is.
Yep. So that afternoon, Father Bodern asked a former student named Walter Halloran if he would drive him on an errand that night. And Bodern didn't think anything about it because Father Bodern couldn't drive at night and he frequently ran him on errands. So he's like, yeah, no problem. So he picked up Father Bodern and Bishop around 9 p.m. and they drove to the address that he gave them. And when they got to the house, Bodern invited him inside with him. He said, on the walk from the car, that's when he told Halloran, oh, by the way, I'm going to be doing an exorcism and I want you to hold the boy down in case we need it. Now, this kid was going to St. Louis University to become a priest. Both of these other men would be priests.
At least the young priest in the exorcist was a fucking boxer. I mean,
well, this kid was like, he was an athlete. He was super ripped. That's why they brought him along. Okay,
so is that why they used the dude being a former boxer as
they needed a muscle
in the exorcist.
Muscle.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. So they came to the house. They told Ronnie that they were going to do some special prayers for instances such as his, and they would be conducting these tonight. And Ronnie kind of just nodded that he understood. And his mom got him ready for bed. And when he was in bed, three men went upstairs with two copies of the Ritual Romanum and a bottle of holy water. They entered the bedroom, followed by Ronnie's mother. I also
wanted a bottle of Jim Beam.
I would have one, maybe three. Blessed, of course. So they went up, and then Ronnie's mom and his aunt and uncle followed suit right behind him. His dad wasn't there. He had to go back to work, so he didn't lose his job, so he'd gone back to work at this point.
Gotta so keep making money to pay for this shit.
Yep. So Bodern comes in, makes a sign of the cross, sprinkles holy water on Ronnie and the bed, kneels down on one side of the bed, and then Bishop kneels down on the opposite side of the bed. And then they instructed Halloran to kneel down at the foot of the bed. So at this point, Bodern starts leading them in prayer, begins reading the Litany of Saints, asking the Lord to have mercy on them. And as he did this, the bed begins to go up and down and then levitated several inches off the fucking floor and then fell back to the floor. And the whole time they continued their prayers. And as soon as
you've already started.
Yeah. Yeah. You can't stop because you can't, you won't, and you don't stop. Yeah.
Low and slow. That is the tempo.
So they continue their prayers. And as soon as they get to the passages of the actual exorcism, that's when Ronnie starts immediately screaming in pain. He throws back to the covers to reveal all these welts that start to show up on his stomach. And every time Father Bodern says the words Dominus, which is Latin for Lord, or Dues, Latin for God, new welts and scratches appear.
Are they in the threes? Are they in the three marks?
It never states how. Oh. There's a few instances where it's really specific, but it just says just red welts.
So I always heard like the three is like, it's like a taunt of the Holy Trinity, the three marks that would, yeah.
Yeah. So the holy man continued to recite the prayers of exorcism. And when they finished, Father Bodern just starts over again. Then he demanded the demon identify itself, more welts start showing up. This time, everyone says it looks like the devil, and its arms have like wings, like bat wings.
Mm-hmm. Tell me your name, demon.
Bodern just keeps going. The next time he says, do S letters appear on Ronnie's chest, spelling out hell. And he just keeps going. The next keeps going. Next word comes up, go, on Ronnie. Then an X shows up. And this goes on and on and on and on. And just goes on. This whole thing goes on and on, by the way. It's fucking, okay. It's a long process.
I'm going to break up this a little bit, get from the creepy thing, because I did fuck up. Like, I went back and listened to Haunted Cabin 2 when I was talking about Keanu Reeves, and I was like, he was Bill S. Preston Esquire. He certainly wasn't. He was Ted Theodore Logan.
Yeah.
So just to let everybody know, nobody busted my balls on it. I'm sure they will. I'm just correcting it.
That's right.
I'm just correcting
it. If you want to give Matt shit, you can email us at hmfppod @gmail.com.
Please do, because nobody's going to bust my balls as hard as I do. Because I listen back to an episode when it comes out, and I'm yelling at myself, you stupid fuck, that wasn't even close. That's why I try to correct myself.
I've only done that about 60 times now, Matt.
It's been a few, but I always try to do it. Always try to do it.
I get it.
It's okay. Save everybody else the hassle. Yeah, I'm more mad than you are. Trust me.
Are you good?
Yes.
You feel better?
Yeah, a little.
Good. All right. This goes on and on until Ronnie finally collapses and falls asleep. And Reverend Bowden just keeps going. And Ronnie starts tossing and turning. His eyes move like really fast back and forth rapidly under his eyelids. And his arms start to twitch. So Halloran reaches out, grabs his arms as he starts thrashing violently. And this kid, who weighs 95 pounds, somehow breaks free of his grasp and fucking breaks his nose.
Wow.
They just continue praying. And then Ronnie starts spitting on Bodern's face. By the way, eyes closed. And he's like several feet
away. Still hitting him.
Still hits him. Yeah. The spitting happens a lot, and this kid never fucking misses with his eyes closed. Like, some people duck, and he still fucking hits them.
Wow.
So they keep going, and occasionally spraying Ronnie's face with holy water, making signs of the cross over his welts and cuts. And Ronnie just yells and grunts and barks like a dog, like low guttural, like death metal shit. Yeah. By the time they finish, it's 5 a.m. and the boy finally is asleep. And so Father Bowden starts to think over, you know, when starts to pray over him after he's finally asleep. And at this point, Ronnie just bolts upright in bed, hisses with his eyes closed, and starts singing Old Man River, followed by some loud, high-pitched, maniacal laughing, swaying his arms like a conductor while he's doing it.
Black Monk!
So Father Bowden starts praying again.
The Black Monk done that with the hand, with the gloves. When she started singing whatever the song she was trying to stop it, it was just like...
Yep.
And I bet it went, find your gloves.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And this shit goes on, and he finally falls asleep around 7:30 a.m. that morning. This is just the first night, dude. This is going to go on for a while.
This is way scarier than the fucking movie.
Oh, it gets a lot worse. It gets a lot worse.
Damn it.
A lot worse. The following night, they return, continue the exorcism. And during the day, by the way, Ronnie is completely unaffected. At night is when all this shit starts happening. And it's almost like he doesn't fucking remember anything that happens, by the way.
They kind of followed that with the movie. It was the first instance when Reagan came down and they were singing that song about heaven. And she said, you're all going to die up there, and piss the floor was the first one.
But oh, there's piss coming and more.
Okay.
There's piss coming. Yeah. Yay. So the next night it takes three grown men to hold Ronnie down, 95 pound Ronnie. He still manages to rack and jerk against them and spit in the face of everyone in the room with his eyes closed from 5 feet away. That night they went till 1:30 a.m.
Green pea soup, I bet.
So the next night, March 18th, the tour continued. Much of the same phenomena happened. But now Ronnie's trying to bite everyone holding him down, too. Around midnight, he falls asleep. Everyone thinks it's over. And then Ronnie stands up on the bed, drops to his knees, and starts reciting the Hail Mary. Then he asks someone to open the window and starts saying, "He's going, he's going." Then he said, "There he goes." And he collapsed on the bed. Ronnie said that he had seen a huge black stain clouding his vision. And inside the darkness, he saw a horrible figure in a black cowl who turned and started walking away from him and grew smaller and smaller and smaller until he disappeared. Ronnie smiled, got out of the bed, and talked with the priest for several minutes, describing all this to them before they left around 1:30. And they thought it was all over.
And it was a distraction, wasn't it? That was just a, go fuck yourself.
Yeah. You're supposed to go fuck yourself.
Make you think you're doing good.
Yeah. After they'd all gone home, and Father Bowden's back at the rectory where he lives, his phone rings around 3:15, and it's Ronnie. He's screaming through the phone that whatever it was, it's coming back. So Father Bowden quickly gets dressed, quietly walks downstairs, wakes up Halloran, and says, "We're going again." And they call Bishop, pick Bishop up on the way, and they can go back to the house and continue the exorcism, where they stay until 7:30 a.m. when Ronnie finally falls asleep. By the way, these men were all secretive about this. They didn't tell anyone what the fuck was going on. I think Halloran was still a student at this point, so he usually got up at 5:30 to start his day. So he's going to school during all this, and both the other men still have their duties on top of all this other stuff. So they're getting no sleep.
Yeah. So you're not strong to begin. You're weak to begin with, and that's what that demon wants in the first place. So you'd be weak and not be on top of your game. And yeah.
So we're going to do a few more nights, and then we're going to have to call it for the day.
It's getting
March
close.
19th. The Unholy Disco continues. Here are some of the highlights. There are shouts that resemble dog barks. And when Bodern says, "I command the unclean spirit to show a sign," Ronnie provided one by pissing all over the bed. And then when Bodern commanded that the demon give its name, more urination, followed by a wonderful rendition of Blue Danube Waltz and the Old Rugged Cross in a voice that Ronnie's own mother claimed was much too beautiful to be his own. That session ended around 3 a.m. And by the way, all these songs were sung in a very racist way.
Oh, it was a racist demon.
Well, I think it was probably poking fun at the Archbishop, who was trying to stop the segregation.
Oh, well, yeah, to get at them. Yeah, get under their skin. Get them mad. Yeah. If they're mad, then they're not being holy anymore.
Trying to find something. Yeah.
Yep.
So the following night, Sunday Funday, March 20th, they continue with more yearning for yearning. And but this time it smelled so rank, they had to open the windows, and Ronnie starts cursing at them, and his voice goes like full Tom Araya, from like really guttural low to screechingly high pitched.
Angel of death.
Some of the events that happened that evening, Father Bishop refused to record because it was too offensive to be put in the diary. But he suggested
that. No, you should have been recording all that shit.
With the Mother Mary perverting the rosary and gesturing masturbation. Everything died down that night around 2 a.m.
Got that from that? They got that part from The Exorcist, or for The Exorcist too. I bet that's why they took that. "Do you know what she's done, your cunting daughter? Let Jesus fuck you."
Yeah. Spoiler alert, if you haven't seen The Exorcist, by the way.
Well, if you haven't seen it, you need to get on the ball. It's fucking awesome.
It's older than we are.
It's way up, 73, man.
Yeah. So at this point, the priest suggests that Ronnie be taken from the home, because everyone's fucking exhausted. So the next day, they admit Ronnie allegedly, they do this kind of a, what's the fucking word I'm looking for? Without revealing his identity, to the Alexian Brothers Hospital in a security room. And by security room, that's what they called the loony bin, basically, instead of a mental ward. They called it a security. So this bed that he was admitted to had leather straps on the bed, bars on the windows, and there was no doorknob on the inside of the room. So you couldn't get out if you were in.
He's strapped and basically in a straitjacket.
Strangely, though, nothing really happened that night other than he had some bad dreams. But no activity happened that night. So the next day he returns to his aunt and uncle's house. And that evening, same shit starts up again. And that's the night the priest suggests that Ronnie be converted to Catholicism.
Okay.
Because they think he would have a better chance because the whole ritual Romanum
is
based on the Catholic faith.
It's Catholic faith, yeah.
Yeah, and Lutheran's like a, you know, third cousin to that, but I think Ronnie's father had been Catholic and converted to Lutheran for his wife. I think that's right. I could be wrong. If I am, sorry.
I'm not exactly sure what the Catholic has to do about it, because like if you read the Bible, which I have read it, Jesus cast demons out into pigs and made them run over a cliff just through his name. So I don't know what being a Catholic.
That was Jesus, Matt.
I know, but I'm saying if you're following Jesus or worshiping Jesus and God, I don't think it should matter what denomination you're from to make it better.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, it makes sense. I get it. But I think they were just trying to convert him over so that.
Well, yeah. Well, once we fix this, I mean, we're going to have more recruits after that.
Pretty much, yeah. That's where I'm gonna call it right there. Because we're only to March 22nd, and we got
a long ways to go, Matt. We got a long ways to go.
I got to tell you, this one's a creepy one, dude. I'm enjoying it, and also I put myself in the stories whenever I'm hearing them, and I'm always just like, if that was my kid, what would I do? I'd be losing my fucking mind. And the priest would be like, I think we're going to go home and get some sleep. I'd be like, you'll go home when I fucking tell you you can go home. Get your ass back in there.
I'll make you a fucking coffee. I'll even put some whiskey in it for you, motherfucker. Like, you're going back
I'll
in
get
there, though.
Cocaine, you son of a bitch. Get your ass in there. I'll get into my stash. I'll let you have some of my stash, but you get your ass back in there. I'm not going to be stingy like Manson.
Oh, fuck. This has been weird doing this again, like we started out here a year ago.
Yes. Just me and you. Feels so empty and alone.
I know, right? There's no one here saying.
What does any of this have to do with gay porn?
Or.
Oi, 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 oi.
Yeah.
Well.
We're trying to make a goulash without a couple of ingredients.
I know, right? It's more like just mac and cheese at this point. It's
mac and cheese with tomatoes.
Yes. Yeah. Guys, thank you again for hanging out and tuning in and continuing to like, rate, and review the podcast. We really fucking appreciate it.
Spotify
preferred. Please, please, please listen on Spotify. It helps us out so much. And fuck, we thank everyone for fucking listening to our bullshit for the last, I think this is going to be like episode, I don't know, we're like up in 60s, somewhere in there. So there's 60 hours of our bullshit. But I just wanted to say I appreciate you motherfuckers. That's what
Hell
I'm
saying. Yes, I do too.
And if you got anything you want to share, man, just email us. Hit us up on Instagram, Facebook, HMFPPOD, or email us at HMFPPOD@gmail.com. That's all I got, Matt. What you got? Got anything?
I'm Spar.
I'm Zach.
Later.
And we will see you next motherfucking Tuesday. Later.
It's evil! Don't touch it!
It's alive!
I like you.
They're coming to get you.
This is
me.
Hello, Mr. Fancy Pants.
What's my line, Zach? What's my line?